This is colloquial, so I will try to do it slowly and explain some of the ideas behind the result that we have obtained. So this is a work with Michael Siegel, Jude Froelich, and Stephen Gustafson. Jude Froelich is at ETH and Stephen Gustafson at UBC. So we consider general nonlinear Schumann equation of the form with initial conditions in H1. And I will come back to assumptions on the nonlinearity and on the potential B. But to give you a picture, we'll draw a cocoon. So this is our real axis, or our plane. The potential is some smoothly, slowly varying function. And the solutions that we will consider are one solitary wave, a small bump on this slowly varying potential. That is the situation that I want you to have in mind when I proceed. Nope, it's enough if it's bounded. But I will give you the precise description in a few minutes. So applications, or rather different application areas where this equation appear, or similar equations, this type. So it's quantum field theory, both really the n-body problem. Both the fermion and the boson case. And in particular, I would like to mention lithium 7-3, which has a focusing nonlinearity that also has a nonlinear Schrödinger equation as its governing equation. Another area of applications is nonlinear physics, nonlinear optics. And here we have both optical fibers and bulk medium. That is, lasers through some non-linear crystals. It's typical. Two more. Plasma physics. And waterways. In plasma physics, the Langmuir waves are described by the cubic and nonlinear Schrödinger equation, and the water waves we can obtain the nonlinear Schrödinger equation. In the cubic case, as an evolution problem. And as all of you, or most of you, are aware of, several of those water waves, plasma physics, and optical fibers, we obtain the nonlinear Schrödinger equation with the cubic nonlinearity as an evolution equation. That means that the potential has to drag along with the envelope, or that we have a time-dependent potential. We will not consider this case now. That's work for extension. But in quantum field physics, like quantum field theory, typically the bosons, and also in the bulk media electromagnetics, we can have a fixed potential, and this equation appears as a limiting case. Different nonlinearities, different potentials, different cases. So you can have, for example, quantum field theory has typically a nonlinearity that's non-local. Whereas, for example, nonlinear optics, the optical fibers, can also have saturating nonlinearities. And the potential will be typically inhomogeneities in the media. So this is the equations. This is typical fields that give this equation. And we have written down our results in a paper that is available at my homepage. Okay. Some vocabulary. And I will follow the physics community and call it solitary waves, rather than solitons, as I got lectured by Walter Strauss on what solitary and solitons are. So, according to him, the notation is when two solitons can meet and don't interact, so they come clean out after each other, and it's solitons. In any other cases, he prefers to call them solitary waves. So, let's stick to that. So, we have a class of solutions for V identically equal to zero. Class of solitary waves is the class of solutions to the generalized nonlinear Schrödinger equation with identically zero potential of the form of that form, and all those parameters B, A, gamma, and mu satisfy the following ordinary differential equations. And with initial conditions, V naught, A naught, gamma naught, and mu naught. All of those depends on T, implicitly. By solving this differential equation, we get them out. And eta here is a solitary wave profile, and its rotation symmetry is positive, and the unique solution to the nonlinear eigenvalue problem of course for us to have a solution to that we need some assumptions on F, which I will come back to. So we can then introduce the notation of a manifold of solitons or solitary waves. So this is the manifold of solitons, and it's parameterized by our solution, which we can of course solve those explicitly, that's no problem. But let's leave it in this form for the moment. This set of equations are called the modulation equation. And a typical, or the solution to this equation, I think you all by now have seen, it's the symmetrical exponentially decaying bump. So now we would like to turn on the potential, put it on, not have it identically conserved. I will come back to that. Okay? If you postpone it a little bit, it will come up. Now when we have a potential non-zero, we can of course not expect to have those free solitary waves. But the aim is, imagine that we start close to one of those, and that let the potential then govern the soliton and see how it is perturbed. So that means somehow we should modify this set of equations and hope that we can describe a solution for this set. So that is the aim of what we are going to do. And before I get started stating the theorem, let's introduce length scales in this problem. And with the potential, there are two typical length scales. They are the scale of the potential, which is really inversely proportional to the gradient. If we had any average of it, we could include it in the frequency, which comes in a second. But we are really interested in that it's slowly varying. So no gradients, smooth function. The second scale the soliton or the solitary wave, and it's proportional to mu 1/2. So mu here is a parameter, it's exactly the same parameter that appeared in the solution of the nonlinear eigenvalue problem, and it's decided by the size of the initial condition. And it will be made precise in a second. So we have two different length scales, the size of the initial condition and the size of how rapidly the function is varying. And this work is in the following regime. We require that the gradient, the maximum of the gradient of V over the square root of this parameter mu is much less than 1. And this size is important for us, so let's denote it with epsilon v. So the typical picture, once again, is a small soliton on a large scale, slowly varying potential. And for simplicity, we will consider mu to be of size 1, And derivatives of V of multi-index alpha up to second order to be less than epsilon raised to alpha times some constant. So the only thing we are saying is the derivatives can't be too big compared to this epsilon V. Yes. Yes. But in that case, we only need it to be bounded by a constant, right? So it's uniformly bounded by a constant. So we have a continuous twice differentiable function, real valued, and as I just wrote over there. The derivatives can't be too big. That's the only assumptions we do on the potential. I will state the assumption, or most of the assumptions, on the nonlinearity. It will be implicit, but, well, that's fairly familiar by now. So the first requirement is that I call it the energy requirement. But since we will take up the symmetry, and also embedding. H1. So this assumption assumes that there exists an f such that the Frischlier derivative of this large f is equal to small f. This is not always true, so we have to make it an assumption. F can be anything so far, non-local or local. It's not specified. We don't need to specify it. Let S be a symmetry, and I will write down the symmetries. Translation, rotation, phase, or boost. Or complex conjugation. Let S be any one of those symmetries. Then we require that S is invariant under this set of symmetries. Okay. Then the next assumptions on the nonlinearity is the familiar global well-posedness. And I would like global well-posedness in H1 and H2. It's not the strongest case or the most general, but the H2 is almost droppable. But let's require it for now. The next assumption existence. Existence of solitary waves. And the third, yes, but if you have a sufficiently bad such F here, this equation might not have a solution. So I'm saying that let's not have so bad F. I would like to have it orbital stable. So solutions should be have orbital stability. This implies that the solution to the nonlinear eigenvalue problem has to be that the mu derivative of the norm of the soliton has to be positive. VL2, thank you. And then I have a blanket technical assumption. Essentially, this assumption is that the null set of some operator, which I will come back to, let's call it L, is equal to the following. That is, we don't have an extra zero of this operator. Lots of things that I promised you to come back to. Let's state the theorem and let's get straight back. Yes, that's what I told you. There is an operator, linear operator L. Some linear operator, which I will state in 5 minutes approximately. That has this. But really it's technical assumptions, which in general can be checked, or for some cases can be checked. So let's state the theorem. Given sufficient, or rather, given two sufficiently small parameters, and the above restrictions on the potential and the nonlinearity, we take the initial condition, we transform it essentially with the symmetries, and we compare it with solitary wave profile, and we require that it's smaller than this initial constant epsilon naught. So the initial state can be transformed to essentially solitary wave profile, that is the solution to the nonlinear eigenvalue problem. One more time? Yes. Yes. One more time? It's H1. Thank you. So we pick or we check whether or not our initial conditions are sufficiently close to this solitary wave profile in H1 norm. Then So there exists a constant large T such that for times less than 1 over epsilon V plus epsilon naught squared. So there is an asymmetry there, which I will come back to. Is of the form one of those solitons plus a perturbation W. And we can say something more. We can say the H1 norm of W in H1 is of size epsilon. And we can also tell you the equations for those modulation parameters. That's part two. This set of modulation equations. It's A, it's the same A as this one. So X minus A comma T. So it's a time dependent perturbation. Comma. And this is the set of modulation equations that we have to modify our original modulation equations with. If I now am a quantum physicist, I'm kind of happy because the first two equations here are really Newton's equation in external potential for a particle with mass a half. Right? So yes, the potential now depends only on A.
Okay. So now I stated my result.
Now I should mention everybody that had done lots of work in this area before. Then I can't say anything. Not in the current paper. So global well posterness was shown by Unidre and Belu, 1979. Existence of soliton by Bersteek and Lyons, 1983. Orbital stability was shown by Weinstein, 85 and 86. Asymptotic stability by Sofer and Weinstein, 92 for bound states, by Busled and Perelman, 1995 in one dimension, Kukanya, 2001 in more than one dimension, Busled and Sulem, 2002 for one dimension, an extension of the earlier work of Busled and Perelman, Rodiansky, Schlag and Sofer, 2003, multiple solitons. And on the dynamics, I would like to mention Bronsky and Girard, 2000 for the cubical nonlinearity, Frölich, Tsai and Yao, 99 for the Hartree case, and S. K.
Kerami,
2002, for the nonlinear Schrodinger equation with this general version of the nonlinearity. So that's a long list of people the last. Kerami, 2002. Okay. So I won't prove this for you, but I will show some of the elements that goes into the proof and try to come back and cover all this wait and see answers that I've given you so far. Yes. It means that that this problem should have a global well-posed solution in H1 and in H2. Okay. Yes?
So you mentioned in your list of other references that work on asymptotic stability.
Yes.
Can you compare this theorem to asymptotic stability? So for finite
time, what's the advantage? Well, one really would like to be able to say this for the long time. So I would really like to have asymptotic stability. But when you perturb it with some potential, we don't know that at the moment. The soliton could be eaten up, go off to radiation, whatever. We don't know asymptotic stability as today. So what this tells is that it gives an explicit description of what happens to the solution for this set of time. If we could reach asymptotic stability, this is what I would, so to say, hope for, that this set of equations should be able to solve them and obtain an infinite once we are outside the soliton. So, for example, if the soliton is compactly supported and we have sufficiently high speed, once we are outside and we happen to have this for it outside, then we can plug it in into asymptotic stability and crank the shaft. So it's complementary, I would say. Or maybe a first step. It's well known, I hope, that this problem has a Hamiltonian structure. The Hamiltonian is this, and here you see the immediate need for that primitive function. And of course it's conserved. And we consider our problem on the space H1 RD. So the complex structure is I minus 1 here. The symplectic form have a Riemann metric. Like that. And they are compatible, as you can see, with plugging this one in here, we obtain a symplectic structure. All of them are in L2, really. That's the underlying space. So the domain of RD, yes. Complex valued. Okay? But, so Okay.
The structures in altitude, but the dynamics is in each one.
Yeah. Yes. I think one can drop the H2 requirement by using some of your smoothing procedure of data or something, but let's keep it for the moment. And that means we can, of course, write the Lonnier-Schödel equation in the following form. Or we can complexify the space and shift over to then we can translate everything of this over and we can write it as where prime denotes the Frisch derivative and J here is, so they are two equivalent ways of looking at this. The next conserved quantity is the mass or the number of particles. Okay, with those two conserved quantities, I would like to define Lyapunov functional. I will denote it with E indexed mu of psi, and I will combine it from the Hamiltonian at zero potential and the Lagrange multiplier times our mass. So this is the main object of this analyze, really. One feature of this Lyapunov functional is that our solitary wave profile is a critical point to it. And that comes from that we choose the potential to be considered. Okay. Yes. Yes. I can write it that way too. Yes, it's the same. Symmetries. This problem has a whole set of them. I mentioned them earlier. But let's so once again we consider the zero potential case, and we know that then we have the gauge invariance. We have the translation. And we have the Galilean. The Galilean translation. So those three are symmetries to the problem. If we now apply them to the solitary waves, then they will form our tangent or part of our tangent space to our manifold. And it's convenient to introduce a transform as the ones we already know, the phase, the translation, the velocity, we can break out. We don't touch the scaling new, because we don't have any scaling invariance. So we leave that in place, but all other we can scale off our solution. I would like to introduce the notation n sigma, where sigma is a set of parameters. So now we have a tool to move on this soliton of manifold, or manifold solitary wave. Okay? So, nothing stops us from using this transformation . We will use a skew orthogonal decomposition. So we take this symmetry transform, apply it to a solution to the generalized non-Nash equation, and split it up into the soliton plus the perturbation. So skew orthogonal is stolen from Arnold. Yes. So this one belongs into H1, RG, R, and we have this structure on L2. So it's really a subset of this. But we could equally well do this for any L2 function, but the solutions are already in H1. So we are only interested. Sorry? Yes, now it's compact. Oh, thank you. Complex size. That's space. And it also answers your question. With this structure that we have here, reduced to the soliton manifold, we have all that structure. So once we have done that decomposition, we should note that we can describe the tangent space of the soliton as the span of the following set of vectors. And if you look at them, they are exactly the infinitesimal generators to the symmetries. And one of the key facts in the analyze . We take our complex structure and restrict it to that the complex structure reduced to this set is invertible. That's really one of the key observations. This one is sufficiently big such that I reduced to it is invertible. For example, if we take the popular gradient eta, I eta, which is the null space of our upcoming operator, then this reduction is identically equal to zero. Now we take this form of the solution, we plug it into the non-linear Schrödinger equation, and out comes a decomposition. I were a little bit hasty. That I here is invertible implies that this decomposition gives a unique sigma and W, and sigma here is the set of parameters. we have a unique decomposition, and we plug this decomposition into the Monge-Schoen equation. We project out in the tangent direction, and the remaining equation we have a linear term, a non-linear term, and a coupling term of our equation. So we have reduced our equation to this form. X zero here is really the leading order behavior of our modulation equations, and X sigma is a fairly complex coupling term between W and sigma. And L sigma here is a linear operator, the Hessian of our energy operator, plus something involving the potential, plus a coupling term, plus the infinitesimal generators to the surface, which I hide by this notation alpha k. Yes? It acts on W. And the next term is the nonlinearity. No, f of sigma. No, it's okay. Thank you. Call it some source term for this equation. Okay, now we have almost everything to prove this. The only thing that is missing or at least to outline where the proof lies. So we have the Lyapunov-Schmidt functional, and one can show that the time derivative of this is of cubic order in our small parameters. It's really an expression in terms of the norm of W, the modulation parameters, and epsilon. Well, let's write it like that. All right? And one can furthermore show that L here denotes the Hessian of my Lyapunov-Schmidt functional, and it's a linear operator. So this is simply a Taylor expansion of this map. We recall that this one was equal to zero. On this space, the skew orthogonal space, this operator, and here comes the assumption on the null spacing, has no. So let me start it one more time. So we have required that it should be skew orthogonal. Oh. I forgot something. It was not enough to have this decomposition. We also needed to require that W should be orthogonal. That is the skew orthogonal decomposition. I'm sorry about that. So this means that W, or IW, really, is orthogonal to the tangent plane to the solitary manifold. On this decomposition, this operator is coercive. Yes. Which here is trivial, I. Really, if you want with the Riemann metric, but yes. So now we have that this difference is bounded from below. We integrate up this, we use the contraction argument, and we prove. For the given time interval, because we integrate the first equation. Okay?
Then I had the graph that I was thinking of showing, but let's skip them. We would like to mention the extensions that we are working on. We would like to include growing potentials, so V going off to infinity, for example, which we can't handle here, or time-dependent potentials. We would also like to extend the time interval. Yes. No, since it now is W here, right? It's not W squared. So my time interval, epsilon naught plus epsilon V squared, right? But as I given it here, it will only be 1 over epsilon. Yes, thank you. So I integrate this one. We integrate this. We get the difference of epsilon at initial conditions, which we use to bind by epsilon naught square. Then we get t times the right hand side, t times essentially epsilon cube. So if I now, as in this presentation, I have this. And then I can improve this a little bit by doing it a little bit more careful. So now I have that this is about bounded on this time by epsilon naught plus epsilon squared. And I have from below that it's W squared minus some constant W H1 cube. And then I need to do a contraction argument to bind this. Okay, that's it. Thank you for your attention.
What's your graph?
My graph? My graph is a numerical simulation of the validity of this result. So we have some epsilon and some constant. We don't know how large any one of these things really are. So I wrote a one-dimensional little program to try to test this. And the crosses is the Newton's equations simulated. It's a one-dimensional equation. The circles are the full nonlinear Schrödinger equation in the cubic nonlinearity integrated. And for anybody who has ever done any such simulation, the two last numbers tells that the simulation might be valid for some time. One more time? What is? So, I have some potential, smooth one. I drop with an epsilon that satisfies the epsilon is equal to 0.4. Then I drop my sench, my cubic nonlinearity soliton, on this. I let time evolve, and the circles here is the solution to the nonlinear Schrödinger equation for this set with the potential. The crosses here is the this is time, and this is the position of the center. So I were interested in checking that Newton's equation we're satisfied. So I pick the top of the soliton and I follow it around. So it moves back and forth. And this is exactly the iteration you see. You see the top of the soliton moving back and forth in this potential. Regular pattern, solution to Newton's equation as you expect. Because I wanted really to see if I could get it to break it, or if it was a long time. So this seems to hint 300 seconds with omega is equal to 1 is a fairly long time. So I managed to simulate this for 300 equivalent seconds, and I can't see any difference. I can't see any difference between... No, I don't say that it's asymptotic because I can imagine position, other initial conditions where I would have a problem. But in this case, it seems to work for a fairly long time. So this is really not publishable. It's only trying to convince myself that we have done something that's correct. This is the periodic solution, or well, essentially I have some kind of exponential that decays. So this one is only interested if I start below. Of course I tried to check when it ran off or whatever, and it agrees very well. Okay, more questions? Yes?
Can you think
special in the case of periodic? I haven't thought about it. Yeah, I mean, sure, but I can't say anything more. I can say that this should be valid, but I can't, right now I don't know that I can say anything else. Yes. So if you imagine the case where we have one bump, we have the soliton, it passes this at high speed, and eventually we are very far from it, right? And then if we then apply one of those asymptotic results, we might be able to prove that the remaining part that stays with a soliton, which will be less than epsilon out here, will be ignorable for the asymptotic stability to hold. That's the picture. Well, I can give you one picture. Imagine that we don't have a nice soliton, but not a nice potential. Imagine that you have a bunch of very sharp needles or something. Then you send the soliton over here. If you would imagine, one can imagine then that those needles will sort of say cut off or pull off part of the soliton, and you will get something in each of them, or maybe only get radiation in them, right? So take high needles, take a small soliton that just passes over them. What happens? And I think that you can very well imagine that you can break up the soliton. Yes. So I told you, what happens if we break it? So at the moment I can't, with this assumption we can show that it's valid. But if we start to make much worse assumptions on the potential, then I can very well imagine that we can kill off this fairly rapidly. Thank you.